So let us begin with opening prayer. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother. Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Om. Om. Peace. Amen. Besides Carla here, we have Rick and Judy and Corliss. So have a lovely gathering this morning. Put out a posting this morning, a strange reversal. It has happened over time that my mind has become even more inwardly focused. As part of this experience, it happens that when I am even at a great distance from dear ones, I feel so very closely connected to them. When on the phone or in person, there are times when a great pressure builds. My brain soon becomes overheated. There are exceptions to this, but on the whole, this is my state. I have questioned, Mother, why choose me as God's minister, a role normally filled by one who revels in the world of social circumstances, whereas God has increasingly made me a recluse? This withdrawal has definitely been at His instigation, both by His command and the way He makes me experience this world. God's love so powerfully flows through me, but so often it does so best at a distance. Usually human relationships feel closest when there is a close physical proximity. But God has given me this strange reversal, such as the mystery of this life God has given me. On another note, the uplifting power of Mother's Mahasamadhi anniversary continues with me, feeling her power and glory resonating within and in the ether all about me. This reality of knowing God and Mother, and Mother in God, makes the world tremble with holy vibration. In truth, I feel myself to be totally empty. God and Guru's presence is all there is. How can I look out on the world and say, God is this and not that, when there is only one? One Spirit, one God, and one Supreme Reality that is all and all in all. God seems to be in a funny mood as He writes this through me, wandering from subject to subject according to His whim. There is a story that comes to mind about a disciple of Master's who went to see Swami Ramdas. When he asked Papa to be his guru, Papa replied to the man, he already had one, Master. But the man replied, my guru is dead. Papa replied, your guru is not dead, you are. Good old Papa goes straight to the point. Resurrect in us, O great ones, your wondrous presence. Make us live, not as the worldly live, for they are dead to you. But renew us in your living waters that bring us wonder and beauty, joy and love unceasingly. The Galilean master said that you cannot serve two masters. You must choose. Either serve God or the world. You definitely live in this world and you must render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. However, there should never be a doubt who your true master is, who is central to your heart, mind, and soul, and is who it is that you truly serve. I hope that you've all, either online or in person, have received the pamphlets that we, the booklets that we put out for Mother's Mahasamadhi. And it's an extraordinary collection of letters, mostly that Mother sent to Papa. And I'd like to read to you this one that's dated October 29th, 1954. Papa came to Seattle. He first was traveling around the world. He came to Switzerland and England, made his way on the East Coast, and then to Minnesota, Michigan perhaps, where Bob Raymer saw Papa and heard him speak. He tells a funny story about that, about how he was invited Papa without really knowing that much about him. But having met him and been very impressed with him, so he invited him to his Rotary Club. So here's all these business people. And Papa spoke for some time on the evils of this world, on materialism, and how you have to get rid of all of that. Meanwhile, Bob's running it through the filter of his businessman mind and shrinking further and further down into a seat as he's thinking, oh my God, what of all these businessmen thinking about me, inviting this man who's telling about the evils of materialism and this world. So after the talk, he drove around and around. He didn't want to go back to his office because he is sure he's going to have a pile of messages of people saying, how dare you insult us with this fellow. So he drove around and finally he said, well, I have to return sometime, so I might as well go back to my office now. And he went back, and when he got there, he did find a pile of messages, and they were all glowing. How wonderful that you invited this man, how much we benefited from his words, and so on. So it's interesting how God plays with us in this way. I remember one time, Mother had two different ways of talking about sex. And one of them is the most beautiful experience between a man and a woman, and just in glowing divine terms. And the other was, it's disgusting, and it's groveling in the mud, and so on. And so Larry had invited a good friend, and he had been raised Mormon, and was no longer, and was very anti-anything, particularly anything anti-sex. So he came, and Mother gave the talk on how disgusting sex is. And Larry and I were thinking, no, Mother, that's the wrong version. You're supposed to be talking about the other one. And he gave Mother a hug at the end, the friend who came, and he didn't say too much about it. But one interesting thing, he was a mechanical engineer. But afterwards, he was very kind of stiff in the way that he carried his body. But afterwards, where he never hugged anybody before, after he hugged Mother, he always hugged everybody after that. So it was an interesting influence that she had on him. But he didn't come back again. It's his test. So Mother met Papa. To continue that story, Bob Raymer invited Mother. Talked to Mother and said, Papa's coming to Seattle, and you must see this man. There, Bob Raymer was a disciple of Master's as well. You must meet this man. You must see him. And so Mother arranged for him to give a talk at their home where she was holding center meetings. And came, and you can read about that in The World as God. So this letter was written sometime after Papa had returned to India. And Mother begins, Blessed Papa, how can I find the words to express the great love of God I feel for you? Ever since your coming, I have been filled with ecstasy. It is as though I am swimming in a sea of His infinite bliss. As I sat at your holy feet, asking the Perfect One to take complete possession of this body temple, I realized that He was before me in the form of the beloved Papa. How clever He is to change the name of God, the Father, to the gentle, loving, and wise Papa, so that his children will not be afraid and can come closer to him. I can only say again and again, as I did when God gave me the tremendous revelation about which I told you, why I, O Lord, why should I, who am less than nothing, be so greatly blessed? Again, he has come to me to verify that I am the Divine Mother in human form, come to protect the universal teachings of the Christ, so that all paths may converge into one road of truth and light, which will lead us to the castle of his presence. Your coming was the fulfillment of his promise to me. You have told me that that which God revealed to me was true, and you have promised that the Divine Mother will take complete possession of this temple soon. How can I say which way she should come? With the rod, the lightning of God, or love and the spirit of meekness? I ask you, what is her will? I want the fire and the wisdom of her light, so that all may see the flame of her glory, and I want her love and spirit of meekness to flow gently to all thirsty souls. Isn't that beautiful? I want the fire and the wisdom of her light, so that all may see the flame of her glory, and I want her love and spirit of meekness to flow gently so to all thirsty souls. Will you tell her that I can no longer live in separation from her? I kneel at your feet and offer you my love on the altar of my devotion to God. May I have your continuous blessing in him. Your humble servant in God and Guru, Yogacharya Mildred Hamilton. This is the feeling of ecstasy and bliss that Mother was feeling. When she went to Anandashram, she fully expected that the bliss of God would come to her in the permanent state of Sahaja Samadhi. She had the idea that she had already gone through much of the mystical crucifixion before she went to India. She really had no idea what God was going to put her through. And through the experiences that she had, she would go through a certain experience, the tremendous burning within her body. And at one point, they put Mother out on the front porch at Anandashram. They have no refrigeration. They had no electricity at that time. They would run a generator in the evening for a couple of hours. Carla and I were at one ashram in the north of India, Pulchati. They were likewise, no electricity. But they would run a generator for some time, so it gave us a feeling of what it was like to be at the ashram. Of course, when the generator went off, the fans went off, and it was very hot and humid there, which also gave us a flavor because Mother was there during the hot season and really going through the Kundalini and having the external heat. It's hard to know how she bore it all. She would get so heated up with this Kundalini fire inside of her that they formed a bucket brigade. And Mother sat on a chair on the front porch and they would pour bucket after bucket of hot water or cold water on her, or as cold as they could find it, from the well in order to cool her off. So this is the kind of conditions that she was in, and she had no idea, and she was brought to the very point of death. And her husband told her, if you don't leave now and go back to Western medicine, you will not live. And Mother said, so be it. I will not leave here until God commands me to and releases me to go back. And so she didn't. And she stayed through this, what on a human level was a terrible, terrible experience. Now we look at the crucifix at the front of the church, and Jesus up on that cross. And we think, what a terrible situation that is, how painful, how difficult. It's difficult to believe that on the Appian Way, 30 years before Jesus went through his crucifixion, that there were 3,000 of those who were in rebellion against Rome, who were all nailed across on their crosses along this Appian Way. What a terrible, terrible thing, and how excruciating a way it is to go. And so we look up there and we think, poor man, all the things that he went through, and our hearts go out to him. And to think that Mother, on her own cross, because in the Bible it says the cross suffered and the cross bled. And of course, that's no wooden cross. That's the cross of this body. And as Mother would say, when she'd stand with her feet together and her arms outstretched, she's in the form of a cross. And so are we all. I remember at one time when God was putting me through certain experiences of the mystical crucifixion. And he laid me down on the ground, on my back, and then suddenly I arched up, and my hands were touching, my feet were touching, but no other part of my body was touching. This is not a position I could normally do, but there was such tremendous power running through me at this time. And I felt this body to be this cross upon which the Son of Man, or the human self, is crucified, in order for the complete and total resurrection of the Son of God. And Mother wanted us all to know that going this way is not a path that's strewn with rose petals. It's difficult. It will ask everything from you. And we think at times that we're prepared for that, but God knows what those difficult points are for us, what those points are that will bring out those elements in us that are yet separated from God. He does not do this simply to torture us or to make us feel bad, but rather he does it in order that we might be cleansed, that the living waters might flow through us, wash us clean. It's a nice thought that we could go down to the altar and we could say, I accept the Lord Jesus Christ as my Savior, and that's it. Try to lead a good life after that. And if we were perfect after that moment, that would be one thing. If we felt God all the time, if we didn't have any temptation, if we felt His bliss. But that's not the case. We may go through a period of time where we feel an exaltation, but gradually we come back down, and that's when the work really begins. Because that's when we are faced with these oppositional forces. When we accept that God has come to us, whether it is physical, emotional, or mental difficulties, that it all comes from Him. It all comes from Him. I received a letter from somebody recently who was going through a difficult situation at work. They had been accused of some things by other co-workers, and they weren't true. For some reason, they had taken it in their minds to go after this individual. And I know them as a deep soul, and they are a wonderful soul. And I knew that there was no truth in these assertions. And it reminded me of a time when I went through a work situation where somebody took it into their mind that I had done them some wrong somehow, and I never knew what that was. But for 2 years, they tried to destroy my reputation. I was accused of theft. I was accused of all kinds of things, none of which were true. Fortunately, I had a very strong supervisor, and he really went to bat for me, or I wouldn't have survived it professionally. And it's an interesting thing to think that you are the target of someone's hatred, especially when you have really no idea why this person has got it into their mind. Finally, the support that she had at the very top of the organization, they left for another job. And within weeks, there's an investigation of this woman, not just towards me, but towards others. And she was summarily fired. But it took a couple years for that to eventually come to pass. And so it was a test for me. Would I personalize it? or would I take it that this is God, come in this form for some unusual purpose, in order to help me, in order to change me, in order to help get me detached from this world? When I came into this world, I oftentimes had concern. I was overly concerned about what other people thought about me. And I was very shy. And so when Mother asked me to start giving talks, and not only give talks, but to speak from my own experience, that really touched a nerve for me, because it was really the last thing in the world that I wanted to do. And so I had to really think about it. And of course, I immediately said yes. But then I had to find a way. In what way could I start to reveal myself, open myself, drop the barriers, this shyness, this fear, that the world should see me? And so it took some time in order for me to get past all of that. But it was the greatest thing Mother could have done for me. Because when I spoke openly and of the most important things that have ever happened to me, these deep inner spiritual experiences. And in the beginning I think, well, what will other people think? Will they think that I'm boasting, or will they think that I'm crazy? Or what, any other reaction? And finally I had to let go of all of that. Because, you know, if I'm thinking about that, I can't be thinking about God. The two cannot go together. I must choose. I must choose God, or I must choose this world. And so when I speak to you, I feel God so greatly in me. And I haven't a clue as to what I'm going to speak in the next moment, except as He feeds it into my mind. It's the most wonderful experience. And so I thank Mother for giving me this experience. I know that there were at least another man whom she asked, and he didn't take Mother up on being a minister. And I think it's too bad, because he had a lot to offer. He really did. So we are, each one of us, tested. And when Mother went to India, she was tested to the extreme. This letter Mother wrote back in 1959, May 21st. And it's after they had returned back from India. And Mother begins, "My blessed Papa, it was just a year ago today that we left the holy soil of Anandashram and the living presence of God in the form of our beloved Papa. My longing to be with you and once again lay my head at your lotus feet is so overpowering that it seems the very force of my desire must transport me there at once. What a year it has been. I have tried and tried to write to you, but it seems as though a power greater than myself has kept me from doing so. Perhaps it is because you said at the beginning of the sadhana I went through under your guidance that I should not try to write letters, but should spend the time in perfecting my God realization. Strangely enough, I was in the process of writing to you on November 24th when I came into another experience which took me out of body consciousness for 3 weeks and into the astral plane. It has taken me from then until now to adjust myself and to return to normalcy of human existence. This experience too, although not as devastating physically as the one I went through in India, was terrible because the adverse forces kept trying to take me forcibly from my body. I fought with everything I had and, as you had previously instructed me, hung on to God alone and prayed. Believe me, I know that only He brought me through. How many times I have wished that I might talk with you, because I do not understand all that has happened to me. I have been shown truth in great measure, but also much of what I have experienced has been terrifying and hallucinatory. While in that state, I, who have only a mediocre voice at best, sang more beautifully than can be imagined, danced as though I had been trained for years as a ballerina, and performed all the asanic postures, none of which I could do before, nor have I been able to do them since. I was in a tremendous magnetic field, which even made my hair stand up on end and go only in one direction, and I actually experienced burns on my body, which were seen by others than myself. While it lasted, I took almost no food or water, and I slept hardly at all. Again, I have been taken to the Bible, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial that is to try you, as though some strange thing has happened to you. When I think of the things that have happened to me since my first experience of samadhi in 1954, I can only say over and over again in utter amazement, "My God, my God," as I try to understand and adjust myself so that I may continue toward my goal. Tremendous changes have taken place in my consciousness as I continue to perceive ever greater visions of the universal pattern. I now fully realize how greatly God blessed me when He released me from the bondage to an organization and set me free to operate only in the Spirit. How blind we remain until the dawn of God realization comes to remove the veils of darkness and limitation from our inner vision. That I have gone the way of the Christ and the cross, I cannot doubt. What I have yet to experience, God and Papa alone know. My only desire is to become one with Him and to live and serve Him in the bliss of His eternal love and light. I am not content to settle for anything less than what you describe to be the ultimate Sahaja Samadhi. The human in me sometimes cringes from the additional horror and suffering, but the Spirit knows that it must and will persevere to the end. The end I speak of is the absolute destruction of the human ego and the birth anew in the consciousness of the Christ. As I remember, you said there were four levels or phases to be experienced before liberation would be attained. Will you please again refresh my memory with regard to these four states? Recently, I've been greatly depressed because I have not, as yet, been able to reach my goal. I cry for Him and to Him to relieve the terrible agony of separation which I still experience. I beg of you, Papa, to intercede with Him for me. Ask Him to fill me with His bliss and the radiance of His presence forever. Father has gone hand in hand with me each step of the way. What a great soul He has become. It has been like Swami Gyanamata said, you will be on the same train but in different compartments. It has been very difficult for Him also, but in a different way. We have grown very close together in our search for God and have a most wonderful marriage. How much we both love you, Papa. There are no words to describe. When we think of your saintliness and the infinite goodness and patience both you and Mother Krishnabai displayed toward us each moment of our stay with you, our hearts melt to overflowing. It is scarcely human possible to conceive of such unselfish love and service. And in spite of all that you must have inconvenienced because of us, even though we couldn't help it, still your last words were, you are welcome to come any time. Would to God that we could return to finish our sadhana at your holy feet. Perhaps God in His infinite mercy will make it possible and under much more favorable conditions. The worst must be over and the darkness behind us. The next step must be a lifting up in exaltation. Surely the adverse forces must know by now that their cause is a hopeless and that I will never give up until I have become one with my beloved. Our little group continues to function under God's direction, although their faith has been tested beyond endurance. Still, they remain with us and are faithful and loyal. There are some wonderful souls among them, and we are very grateful that God has so blessed us. I remember Papa's injunction not to start an ashram, and am in full accord with his wisdom. There must be no regimentation, only full liberty for each one to worship God in accordance with the law of his own being. Isn't that magnificent? It's really difficult to avoid organizations at times. And here's Mother saying, there must be no regimentation, only full liberty for each to worship God in accordance with the law of his own being. How greatly you have changed me, little Papa, and how grateful I am. Your only wish was to eat my ego and take me to God. Even the physical and mental were sacrificed to the utmost to accomplish God's purpose. I remember so well the day you said to me, you will be a tremendous power for God in the Western world. And on another occasion, I said to you, it promises to be very interesting, does it not, Papa? And you answered, interesting is scarcely the word. I then asked, terrific, tremendous, colossal? And you said, ah, yes, that is what it will be. I look forward to that day because if Papa said so, it will happen. God will help us because he knows we both want only to serve him. I know beyond doubt that the first and only important thing is to become one with him no matter in which direction it leads us. And then all the rest will follow. The blind cannot lead the blind. One must have full God consciousness before he can be the channel through which God alone can liberate others. But also one can serve as God directs while gaining enlightenment. In fact, it is sometimes the very means by which he reaches the goal. Would we refuse a cup of water to one who is thirsty? Just because we do not have the ocean beside us? Each Sunday now, as I give a sermon to our people, I feel the power of God ever increasing, sometimes to the point where I have difficulty returning to a state of consciousness where I can converse normally with them after the service. Through the very act of permitting me to serve him, am I not becoming ever closer to him? I know that I of myself am nothing. My ignorance is colossal. It is only my Father who doeth the works. You have put your stamp of God upon me for all time, beloved little Papa, and I can never be the same again. And for this I thank God with all of my heart. Even though you have discontinued writing, you will remember what that you promised me. You would write to me, guiding and directing me in the work I must do. Please let me have your comments, criticisms, and suggestions in full measure. We both know that your blessings are with us always. This is an unusually long letter, and I hope it does not tire you to read it. However, I have a lot to report to you regarding your progress. Our progress, and a year is a long time. Please convey our love and devotion to Mother. I shall be grateful to both of you all the days of my life for all that you did for me. Tell her that I now understand the true guru relationship, and I know that she meant when she said that you and my master are but different sides of the same face. Give our love also to our beloved Satchitananda and all others there who work so hard to carry out your teachings and to serve us. May the light of God, which has so completely illumined your being, continue to shine forth for many years to come, beckoning all with whom you come into contact to forsake the darkness of ignorance and follow Him, the light of the world. My love and devotion for you burns forever on the altar of my soul. Yogacharya, Mildred Hamilton. Not a tremendous letter. And it gives so much insight into Mother's state of mind at the time. If we are to follow this path, and really there is no other path, because as you look around the world, you'd say, well, was it because Mother was following a Christian path that she went through so many difficulties? But if you look at many of the great masters, Ramakrishna is one, and he used to beat his head onto the ground because God was absent from him, and he went through so many difficult things in the body. When somebody asked him, why does your body suffer so much? He said, it is like there is an elephant in a hut. An elephant in a hut. And that elephant begins to just move a little bit to the left and to the right. What happens to that hut as that elephant begins to move back and forth? And so it is with God inside, as God begins to move. And you look at the life of Meher Baba, and he was put into this experience by a wonderful Islam saint, a woman saint. And after that experience, he would beat his head onto the ground, trying to get himself oriented back into this body consciousness again. And he went through so many difficulties. So you see, the path is the same, whether you're of the east or the west, north or the south, because it is the human experience. Every human must go through this. It is the Son of Man inside of us that must go through all of these experiences. And as I said earlier, it will test you. It will test you to the very core of your being, and in ways that you may have never suspected that God would come to you in that way. But when you dedicate your heart, your mind, and your soul to God, then take it as a fact that everything that God does to you, everything that happens to you in this world, is orchestrated through His intelligence, His goodwill, His desire to release you from everything that you have experienced in the past and has limited you and has separated you from God. All of that must go. It must go. And so what is our attitude as we go through these experiences? It is to keep our mind on God. To keep our mind on God. To keep our mind on God. That's such a difficult thing. It's so easy to have a pity party. You notice that pity parties are always attended only by one person, and that's us. And we feel so sorry for ourselves because we think nobody else has ever been so put upon. Nobody else has ever had the problems that we have. And so we go through these experiences, but we don't go into that reclusion of just thinking of ourselves as a separate being. But rather we open ourselves to God's grace, to God's love, to God's presence, even when we don't feel it. It's most important to do it then. And you can be honest with God. You don't have to jolly God along. You can tell Him, I am so lost. I am so desperate. I am in such pain and such difficulty. I am so disappointed and angry about this. God has big shoulders and He can take it. And you give Him everything. Everything that you're feeling. Everything that you're thinking. Because when you do that, you connect all of that with God. And God is the greatest healing force on this world. In fact, in truth, ultimately, He is the only healing force. And so you make a connection with God in everything that you're experiencing, everything that you're feeling. Even if you're not feeling any great aspiration to know God, take that to God. Say, God, what is your purpose here? I know that you have put me here to realize you. And yet I find all these things of the world so much more interesting than you. I don't feel that great draw. I don't feel that great love. I don't feel that magnetism that draws me to you only. Awaken that in me. Only you have the power to change me, to make that so. I remember a time in my life when I felt absolutely no love, and I asked God to give me that love, and there's a little part of me who felt a little strange about asking God to give me love for God. But really, when you think about it, where else will it come from if we don't feel it? It has to come from God. It is His grace that lifts us up. It is His grace that changes us. It is His grace that empowers us and propels us toward the infinite goal. And so let us not be satisfied with just the cup that God gives to us. But we want to dive deep into the ocean. We want to dissolve in the ocean, merge ourselves into that ocean, lose ourselves in God. And then, if it is God's will, He will reform us as He did with Mother. Mother told the story of the salt doll, a doll that was made completely out of rock-hard salt. It's put into a dress, and one day the salt doll wanted to go to the ocean and see what the ocean was like. And as it swam into the waves and started to move into the ocean, of course it dissolved, because it is made up of the very same stuff the ocean is, and emerged in with the salt, the ocean. Ramakrishna used to tell that story. And then Mother took the story a step further. And then the ocean, the Divine Mother in the ocean, took to her bosom and reformed the salt doll once again and laid it at the shores of the ocean in order to tell all mankind that God is life and life is God. Mother did so. She expended herself completely for our sake, that we might be uplifted, that we might be changed, that we might seek out God alone. Never in her life, or any great spiritual master's life, do they desire or want a cult of individualism, where you worship an individual. They are here to awaken God in us, to awaken love of God in us, so that we might seek Him. When I first started coming to Mother, I felt the power of God in her so powerfully, like a spiritual windstorm that was blowing past me and lifting me up. And I definitely did not have the answers at the time, but I felt that God experience with her. And every time I would come back to a talk, I would wonder, will it be the same? Will I feel that same spiritual windstorm? And I did every single time. It had varying levels of wind to it. Sometimes it could blow softly like a breeze. Other times it was a tremendous hurricane that was wiping out everything that was not of God. But it lifted me up in God experience. She told me to love and to serve God first, middle, and last. And it took time for me to really be able to go to work on the things that she taught. The first time that I met Mother, she sang with the harmonium, Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, and taught us all to sing it, and that we should sing it always. And I wasn't even sure I liked the tune. It was had a haunting kind of melody to me. But I didn't forget it. And it went someplace into some deep soil in me, and it started to grow. And I started to feel the upliftment and the bliss of God when I chanted it. And then I took Kriya from Mother, a tremendous, powerful event. And with that, new beginnings all started to open up. It didn't happen overnight. It took time, and there was a long time that I was in a dark night of the soul, even the dark night of the soul that I have officially in, for 2 years. But before that, so many years of sadhana, where I felt the bliss of God at times, but it seemed like much more I felt the darkness and the heaviness and the desire to remove this pain that God had put me into. Because it was a spiritual pain. It was a depth of loneliness for God that would not go away. And at the time, I considered it a curse. Today, I consider it the greatest blessing. Isn't that interesting? How something can so diametrically change. You think something is awful at one time. And later on, you think that is the best thing that ever happened to me. And then something else seems like the best thing that ever happened to you. And then later on, you think that was terrible. That was awful. I should not have gone down that road at all. Very interesting how that works. But Mother stands as a beacon, continues to stand as a beacon. Because her light, her life, her glory hasn't gone anywhere. If we think so, it's because we are dead. Not she. To awaken, to arise, to become one with the infinite Lord. That is all any great saint or spiritual master ever wanted for us. To experience what they experience, to know what they know. Not to kowtow to another person. They have no interest in that. Because they feel the greatness of God, they want us to feel it and experience it and know it just as deeply, just as profoundly. So let us take inspiration from Mother's life, Papa's life, Master's life, all the great saints and sages all around the world. Take our cue from them. And seek out God above all other things. To know that He is the life that flows through us. You know, sometimes when we think we're far from God, just think, He is the life force that flows through me. I could not lift my arm. I could not speak a word. I could not think a thought. I could not have any sense of self or being if God were not constantly feeding me, supplying me, revealing Himself in me. And so you take the tiniest motions, your very thought process, and you connect that with God. That is God speaking to you, flowing to you, if you would but know it. And the moment you make that conscious connection with that, then the purity of God's presence begins to this thought, not that thought. Go here, not there. And as you listen to that and you honor it through your actions, that voice grows more greatly. But if that voice comes to us and we ignore it, we don't think we like it, and we go the opposite direction, then we build a wall between ourselves and God. This is the truth. And then we get so far down and then we think, how did I become so miserable? And you can trace it right back to that moment where you ignored God's prompting. Meditate longer, more deeply, more often. No, I've got all of these things to do, God. I couldn't possibly have the time for that. And because we ignored His injunction, then we lose connection with Him, not all at once, but gradually and over time, until we feel we have dropped into a very deep and dark valley. And then we have to work ourselves out. And we do that so many different times that we finally say, why don't I save myself the trouble of having to dig myself back out and do what God tells me to do the first time? Isn't that a good idea? And it is a good idea. It's the best idea. So wherever we go in this wide world, let us feel God. Let us love God. Let us serve Him. With all of our hearts, all of our minds, all of our souls. Let us think on Mother, because she is a conduit to the Divine Mother and to God. And through this, we might feel greater power, greater sense of His glory, His love, His joy. And that's not limited to Mother, of course. That's any of the great saints, any of the great spiritual masters the world over. But perhaps for us, particularly with Mother. Because through her grace, she came to us to help to save us and to lift us into the heavenly kingdom. My blessings, my love, I pronoun to you, I bow to God inside of you. And that you might be lifted up into His presence and feel the greatness of His bliss. You know, I don't even feel this body as I'm speaking to you. I only feel His bliss, His joy, His light. These bodies, they come and go. How many have we had? They're like some clothing or a car you get, and it's all shiny new in the beginning. And then it gets a little mileage on it, and it's not so shiny new anymore. And eventually one day we say, all right, it served its purpose. And we drop it off, just like we would drop off some clothes or a car. And we may have some affection for that clothing or a car and say, oh, you've served me really well. I've really enjoyed you. But it's time to put you away. But it does not diminish you in the least. In fact, if we would but know it, death is a great release. And especially when we fulfill what we have come to do, then death becomes a great celebration. That's true. That's true. And you look back on this life and you think, it is good. And God agrees with you. And it is good. All of it. So all of my love to you, all of our blessings from the desert, and go with God. Let us sing some Oms together. Om. Thinking of Diane in particular, and great power of Om and Amen coming in body, mind, and soul. Victoria Group, all love and all blessings. Amen. And it's so lovely to see you all this morning. Adios.